Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here with a special edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio, featuring the really rather brilliant Josh Widdicombe. I love Josh, his new childhood memoir, Watching Neighbours Twice a Day, How 90s TV Almost Prepared Me for My Life. Almost, that is, in brackets, prepared me for life. So he was watching them, I was making them, and here together we both reminisce about them. I hope you enjoy it. Lots of people did, which is why we've turned this into a podcast. Bastis Alexander, over to you.
He's a star of stand-up, a prince of podcasting, a titan of telly, and now an acclaimed author. His new book, Watching Neighbours Twice a Day, How 90s TV Almost Prepared Me for Life, is out tomorrow. So please welcome a man who has Scott and Charlene to thank for everything, apparently. It's the wonderful Josh Widdicombe.
Morning,
hello.
Josh.
How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Great. What a song. Lovely to hear
it. Isn't it? It's good, isn't it? So this book, it is a love letter to the telly of the 90s. First of all, before we talk about what's in it and your take on telly, tell us about where you watch telly, where the telly was for you. I used to watch telly as a kid a lot on the floor, more than on the sofa. Just give us a sense of where you were watching and how you were watching before we talk about what you were watching.
Okay, so I grew up in Devon on Dartmoor, and so I lived in a kind of house in the middle of nowhere. And half my house was my gran's house, and I'd watch some of it in that with my gran, and half of it I'd watch on my own, kind of on the sofa. I'd just sit on the sofa, I'd sit on the floor, and it was like, you know, the TV, you can't go too close to the TV in those days because it's like dangerous for some reason that you don't know
which
why.
It wasn't at all, was it?
Well, I don't know.
You'll ruin your eyesight.
Yeah, exactly.
No, my jeans will ruin my eyesight, mostly.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the sun, perhaps, but not like Channel 4. That's not going to ruin my eyesight.
No, that wasn't the reason I'm wearing glasses now. So I'd sit there and I would just watch TV. Unlike now, when I watch TV and I'd have my phone out, or I'd watch TV and I'd be pottering, you're actually watching the television.
Yeah.
You were consciously, everything that were on it, that was all you were doing.
Did you love the telly?
I adored it. I didn't realise how much I adored it. I was, like, I grew up on Dartmoor, so people into Outward Bound stuff had no interest in that kind of stuff.
Just going out, you were Outward Bounding. Going for a loaf would involve a compass and a flare, I would imagine.
Yeah, of course. We had a post office that's since closed down, and that was all we had in our village.
But it is like a window into another world, depending on which programme you're watching. And I suppose the more isolated you are, not that you were completely isolated, but Dartmoor, you know, it's not the densest, most densely populated place on the planet, is it? You know, and I know what you said, because from what I've read, I haven't read all your books. I usually do read all the books, but I had this awards thing to do yesterday, which is very, very important. NHS / Who Cares Wins Awards, which is amazing. But Rachel's read your book cover to cover. I can't wait to read it in full. But, you know, it's escapism and also a desperation to therefore then go and actually escape and find out, go and seek out nirvana. Because some programmes you could sort of probably get to one day in the future, and others were completely fictional. So you know, in a league table of the genre of telly that you enjoyed, how would you categorise that, those different programmes?
Well, I kind of, so obviously you'd go through these phases. So when I was like first started, when I was 8, 9, 10, 11, whatever, all we wanted to do was live on Ramsey Street. Do you know what I mean? And all we do... And it's that, you know, the cliche of you had to have watched Top of the Pops in the 80s or the 70s to be able to talk about it. You had to have watched Neighbours. You had to have watched it to talk to people the next day at school. We lived our lives as much on Ramsey Street as we did in real life.
Yeah.
And, like, re-watching these shows to write this book... almost, it sounds mad, but it's almost more vivid memories than your actual childhood of watching these. Watching Gladiators, like, hits me like a kind of nostalgic.
Gladiators is a good show, wasn't it? Now, Ramsey Street's interesting. And by the way, everybody chip in. This is a free-for-all. See, because Neighbours, you know, I was sort of too old for Neighbours, even though it was a massive phenomenon. But because I was hosting The Big Breakfast, which I know you talk about in the book, and very, very, very fondly, so thank you so much for that. But we had a lot of guests on from Neighbours, which I didn't really get, but all the kids who watched the show loved you know, the people that we had on. So that was a funny old thing as far as I was concerned. Mm. And so other references in your book, you know, because I think you have a very wise and witty and pithy head on young shoulders, or younger than my shoulders anyway. But I do think you're quite old for your time. And I think I was quite old for my time as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you know what I said? Do you know what I mean about that? Do you get the sense of that of yourself?
Totally. And I think it's because my parents, I grew up, my parents were hippies, and so there was very few little rules. And so I was watching everything from very early on. So I was watching, like, Bottom at the age of 9 and 10.
Because I thought you weren't even born when some of these programmes were on, but you were just about.
Yeah, I was just, but they would just be on the TV. I remember watching Have I Got News For You when I didn't know, I didn't even understand what was going on.
I mean, it's still a good show, but it was a great show.
Yeah,
back in the day.
And I'd watch all these shows and it would feel just so exciting and so vivid and so different from my life. Obviously, without, you know, TFI Friday was probably the most... I say in the book, like, TFI Friday Bar was felt to me like the most exciting place on the earth.
It was better than the Star Wars bar. It was better than that. You know, and more freakish on occasion. See, on page 51, you talk about El Dorado, right?
Yeah.
And what's funny about this is, you know, we can have the conversation on the air or off the air about how some of these programmes come about. Because you probably don't know, and I do know some of the behind-the-scenes reasons of how these came about. El Dorado was a replacement for Wogan.
Yeah. It was. Well, I vaguely remember like it being the biggest thing that was going to happen. In the connection I had to El Dorado was that my gran, who was an old actress, she knew one of the women who was in El Dorado,
right.
Leslie Udwin, was a very respected actress.
Yeah,
and there was this kind of thing. This is going to be the biggest TV show in Britain. There's no doubt about it. This can't fail. And of course, it failed in spectacular circumstances.
So Terry was on Monday, Wednesday, Friday on his chat show, and that was the most frequent chat show the UK had ever seen, especially a showbiz chat show. And so it was nearly American style, but it wasn't quite. And when Terry started his show, which I think was from the Shepherd's Bush Empire, wasn't it, for most of its life, he was getting 17 million viewers a night, and then that sort of began to decrease, but it's still pretty healthy, you know. And in the end, it went down to a point where the then head of entertainment at the BBC, Jim Moyer, said, you know, Terry, we need to talk about this. And Terry said, okay, I get it. Maybe, you know, all things come to an end and maybe this is it. And the problem for the BBC was not coming up with one new hit show, because it was three slots and it was 7 o'clock on BBC One. And so they thought, well, the chances of coming up with three hits to replace Terry, because it's a big old hole. I mean, this is the thing, you know.
That's so interesting.
If you axe Wogan, you know, you better be sure, because, you know, where's the grout that's going to fill those cracks, those schisms, you know, those canyons? Because that's what they are, you know.
Yeah.
And basically, they should have left the show on. But they thought in their complete lack of wisdom, which they'd already sort of furrowed the plough of, they just thought, well, we now realise we're never going to say it aloud, we're so crazy, we have to get even crazier. So let's come up with one show that's so good, one new show that's so good, which you can't do, because they're not good until they're on for a while, and put that on three nights a week. And it was El Dorado. The genius plan was El Dorado.
It's mad. So the mad things they did with El Dorado were like stuff like, they then had this idea, we could sell this to Europe. So they will cast loads of European families.
Yeah.
These families spoke Danish in scenes unsubtitled. So you had scenes on BBC One and you're like, who can understand this? Like Peter Schmeichel. That's it. Like that's the only person in the UK. Like, and you've got, they hadn't built the set. So there's diggers on set.
Well, they had to build a village. It wasn't a set. It was a real village. And that was the whole point.
And then they built it out of stone. And when they came to record, they were like, oh, all the sound echoes because we built it out of stone. It was like this...
This is the BBC, who pretty much know what they're doing when it comes to broadcasting. But they just had this massive brain fart over the whole thing. I mean, it started off with Let's Axe Wogan. And, you know, once that sort of switch had been flicked, there was no going back. But what they could have done the week after was, let's just not axe Wogan. How about that? How about we do that? You know, because it was fine. Back to Neighbours. So what time did you watch? By the way, because you're all Neighbours, the Neighbours generation. Yeah. I'm not. I
love Neighbours.
Half generation old, even though it's around the people of my age watch. So when did you watch your Neighbours? Because did you watch it straight after school? Can you remember what time it was on?
It was on 5:35 p.m.
Right.
And then there was a lunchtime one, which was on at 1:45 right. that you got to watch during the holidays or if you were...
Off sick.
Yeah.
Right. Now, that's interesting because there's a story. So Michael Michael Grade was in charge of commissioning Navy. Do you know this story?
No.
So it was commissioned as a daytime... It was bought... It was commissioned as a daytime soap in Australia, but it was bought by Michael Grade for the BBC as a daytime watch. And he paid... I think it was the most the BBC had paid for anything like that ever. And it was loads and loads of money. And Reg Grundy... who ran Grundy Television, was the genius, the first ever genius, who made the show and kept the tapes, as opposed to reusing them to save money. And everybody said, why are you keeping the tapes? He said, because I believe people will want to watch the same programme again and again and again. And the constant points of view complaint to the BBC was, dear BBC, repeats, repeats, repeats. It's all you get on the BBC. Look at Netflix now. You know, look at Amazon. This is, they live on their back catalogue. And of course, Reg Grundy said, I believe this is going, this is the way forward. And Michael Grade agreed with it. So he bought the back catalogue and the shows that have still been made from Neighbours. But they put it on in the day and it bombed.
Did it?
It bombed. And Michael Grade's daughter was off school sick. Right?
Yeah.
And she started watching this amazing show in the day and she said, Dad, what's this program? Oh, he said, don't talk to me about that. You know, I think I might lose my job over it. She said, but Dad, my friends would love this. Why don't you put it on when we can watch it after we get home at school? The next week, he changed the time of it. 17 million viewers. 20 million viewers. Boom. That's the story behind that one.
She's now head of commissioning at BBC One.
I think she owns Universal Studios. Something like that. So where do we go next? I mean, look, live and kicking, the big Saturday morning telly.
Yeah.
Off you go.
Well, obviously, Live and Kicking felt like the coolest thing for kids. It was like, basically, Live and Kicking was, it was a prepubescent TFI Friday in that sense. Do you know what I mean? It was Trevor and Simon, which was your comedy, which were two people that were far...
Still are hilarious.
Yeah, you were like, these are Vic and Bob. These aren't... Why are they on kids' TV? They were so good.
It was so rebellious. It had that air of rebellion about it, didn't
it? It just felt so exciting. And you had Zoe Ball, obviously, who's brilliant, and Jamie Theakston. Yeah. And you... It felt like, you know, it's that feeling, the best TV is the stuff that feels like it's just about to go wrong the whole way. Yeah. It feels like anything could happen at any point. And Live and Kicking was that kids' TV show, and you'd watch it, it'd be like 4 hours.
I know.
And you wouldn't ever look away. I don't know. I mean, I must have watched so many hours of television as a child.
Yeah, but as a child, you know, you've got all that going on, haven't you? And you say, you know, it was pre-TFI Friday, but in a way, Live and Kicking and TFI Friday, they conflated. And so did Anton Deck in the end over on ITV. SMTV, my last appearance on telly for 5 years, I think, was on SMTV. I did my last ever TFI Friday, went out all night and pitched up as a guest on SMTV the next day. I can't remember much of it, to be honest. And also, I had to learn a script to be in... Was it Mates? Chums?
Chums.
I had to be in Chums. Yeah. Which you had to learn a script for. I had no idea what the heck I was doing.
Did you improvise?
But it was awesome. It was, like you say, you were watching my shows and other shows, you know, and Dartmoor. And you, what were you thinking? Were you thinking, I want some of that? Or?
Well, do you know what? It felt so untouchable. I'd been to London, like, once... by the time I was 16 or whatever, it didn't feel like I could do this, I could be there. It felt like that's that thing that's untouchable, in the same way maybe like a Hollywood movie would feel now or whatever. Do you know what I mean? These things felt completely divorced from my life.
You know, I've talked to Channel 4 about this not a long time ago, in the recent past, about taking that rolling format of Saturday mornings and sticking it on Friday night. Mm. And just, you know, why not? It's not expensive. If you actually, you know, the longer a show's on telly for, the cheaper it gets, because that's just how the maths of it work. And I do think this open-ended show we sort of did it when TFI Friday came back for that 20th anniversary edition, which wasn't the 20th, it was the 19th, but we just got it wrong by a year, but nobody noticed. It was hilarious. TFI came back on, and Jay Hunter, who was in charge of Channel 4 at the time, I phoned her up on the day of the show, and it was going to be live. And I said to her, I said, Jay, we've got too much in the show. And she said, and? I said, can we just stay on for longer? And she said, do what you want. So we did. We stayed on for as long as we wanted to, you know. And I just think that there's room for that. Now, not on Saturday morning, but especially, you know, your lot are 40-odd, right?
Yeah.
And they've got renewed juice and old juice to draw from. My lot would be bang up for that. And kids would think it'd be their first ever naughty show. You know, like you, the first show you could watch after 9 o'clock, were allowed to watch after 9 o'clock by your parents. That was all. That was a big deal. That was a rite of passage.
Yeah, that was very exciting. Like, and that's that comedy to me felt so exciting because it felt so. The comedy at that point, there was this period where like 9 till 10 on a Friday on BBC Two and Channel Four were consistently these amazing comedy shows, like Father Ted or Shooting Stars or Fast Show or yada yada yada. Yeah. And those shows felt like, you're right, it felt as exciting as music felt. Do you know what I mean? I know comedy is the new rock and roll, it's like the classic cliche, but at that point in the 90s, it felt like all that comedy was a way into a world, I think, in a way that pop music or punk music or the Beatles in the 60s or whatever felt to other generations. Yeah. And that was the kind of TV that completely like changed my life and the life of so many of our kind of peers and so many people that have gone on to be comedians.
It's so true. And looking through the way, you know, the order with which you've composed the chapters in the book, it's a gorgeous read. It's a gorgeous journey. And also it's very telling because here we go, you know, towards the end, 30 odd chapters, here we go. So you got curveballs, typical Whittaker-esque curveballs, like election 97. You've got to throw that one in. genius.
You've got to mention it. It's a big.
Of course it is. It's huge. And it was a seminal election. Of course it was. It was seismic. And then I'm Alan Partridge, of course, commercial break. CFAX. You've stuck CFAX in.
Yeah, I don't think you can talk about 90s TV without discussing CFAX because it was such a big thing.
Well, how many test matches were watched in the pub via CFAX?
Yeah. And you'd watch it in Dartmoor and we didn't get proper TV signal. So you'd have, like, you didn't get all the letters.
CFAX,
so you're trying to work out
the
scores.
Like Star Trek on Dartmoor, wasn't it? It's like, this is the future. It's exciting, isn't it? I think the number's about to change. Right, so the TFI, I remember having Badly, which was a juggernaut
huge,
of a show. I mean, that was
show.
A massive programme, wasn't it? That and Fantasy Football League
as
well.
Oh, yeah. It's the kind of these shows that, I mean, obviously there's shows that define a time. There's shows like Friends, which is now still watched. Remember Haven Badly is a show that is so of its time.
Yeah.
Such a moment in time. But it's not just like, it'd be really like, you'd be wrong to go, oh, it's just a show about two lads. And it was a brilliant sitcom. It was and despite being called Remember Haven Badly, it's a cast of two men and two women that are just all brilliant characters and brilliant comic actors. And it was an amazing show that almost like defined the 90s as much as maybe Only Fools and Horses defined the 80s.
What's interesting for me, Josh, and I don't know if you're doing it on purpose, is you finish the telly shows that we recognise with Big Brother.
Yes.
Which for me is a very interesting point in telly's history.
Mm.
Before I give you my take on Big Brother, what's your take on Big Brother?
My take is, so that was a kind of last show that kind of defined me growing up, but it was also the show that
It
changed everything. I think that, along with Pop Stars, which are the two shows that led to the change in reality TV and led to that starting. And they were, if you watch Big Brother 1 now, there's a huge innocence to it. It's really weird. You've got that nasty Nick gets thrown out of Big Brother 1. Basically, for the, you know, the things that happen on Love Island now, and he had a contraband pencil and he was writing people's names down. And this was the biggest news in Britain. And we were like, this is too much. These people are big. And that was as racy as it felt at that point. But Big Brother was the turning point in everything. And that feels to me, televisually, like the end of the 90s and the beginning of the 2000s.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it was non-scripted. It didn't have artists on. It didn't have premeditated content on, you know. And I think it was really important because it was the defining show of its decade. And as was TFI Friday, I think I can say that. I mean, I was involved in it. And you go, but it was always the music shows, usually on BBC Two or TFI Friday, music/guest shows, which seemed to be the zeitgeist from a telly point of view, the spokes show for that particular generation. And Big Brother was the first show that wasn't like the others before. So in the 60s, you'd have probably Ready, Steady, Go, and then you'd work through. You could have Top of the Pops, which I think enjoyed its zenith in the 80s. Then you would have, 70s. Then you'd have The Tube, and then you'd have the one with Terry Christian, The Word.
The Word, yeah.
Then you'd have The White Room, which happened for a while.
Yeah.
And then TFI Friday. And I'm sure there's some in between I've forgotten. Oh, Grey Whistle Test over on BBC Two, of course. But Big Brother wasn't like that. And it was the first series, and the first few series were I mean, you must watch telly. You can take your eyes off them. But they didn't have any real content. And that's where content stopped. And for me, I still meet people in bands today who are in bands because they watch TFI Friday or, you know, like yourself, in the business because... Not just TFI Friday, but...
No, live TFI Friday is a huge
on all the other shows.
Yeah.
All these, and they were very, very aspirational. But you had to do something to be on one of them one day. You had to write jokes or you had to do what I do for a living, you know, write various programs in various different ways, but, you know, pay homage to the Generation Game and Swap Shop and come up with these conceits and live ways of hitting people in audiences and giving them the dream they never know they even had, things like that. But there was real endeavour behind it. And there was a genius idea behind Big Brother, but it wasn't content-led. And then it became empty, still watchable, still massively successful, but where was the aspiration in the end? And in the end, there's very little there ended up to be, you know, very little aspiration.
I think that's totally true, and I think you end up with this kind of it's the age of the reality TV star, isn't it? It's the age of fame for fame's sake and wanting to be on TV because you want to be on TV. And you'd hope even people that you'd consider, like, you know, what really wanted to be famous. So, for instance, the Spice Girls in the 90s, there was a lot of, you know, they wanted to be famous, but they created amazing songs and they created this amazing band.
They made a movie.
They made a movie. And it wasn't just that they were famous for being famous. They were famous for creating 5 or 10 of the songs that you could still listen to today and still totally timeless.
And sold out stadiums the year before because of that. Because that resonance of depth of, oh, there's something at the middle, at the centre of
all this. There was that Spice... like, when I was a teenage boy, I wasn't into the Spice. I thought I was too cool for the Spice Girls. Yeah. But now I go, that was probably the most amazing pop band that existed in my lifetime. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Somebody needs to punk it up now on telly. Sorry, you were going to say...
No,
go ahead.
No, I just think that's the difference, really, isn't it, between then and now, is that I also think there's this situation where, because of social media now, obviously, there's no mystery, there's no kind of... Everyone sees everything and people are far more... You know, they're far more human, which in a way is good, you see more of them. But in another side... You don't get these kind of untouchable, weird celebrities in the same way that you did in the 90s.
I mean, maybe we're missing a point and, you know, we sound like two old fogies, me much older than you. And maybe it is YouTube. Maybe the new punk is YouTube. But somebody needs to parachute in on big telly, you know, if you forgive the phrase, but, you know, on BBC One or on Sky Max. And everybody's having a really good go. And so there's some amazing sort of preconceived, written set pieces going on. I mean, to be honest, that genre of telly is really enjoying its golden age.
Yeah.
But big Friday, Saturday night shows. Antonek's Takeaway is awesome still. I still love Britain's Got Talent. The X Factor's gone now, isn't it? They've retired that. But I wonder what is simmering away somewhere in somebody's, you know, late teenage, early kid's head somewhere.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What was really interesting writing it is I wouldn't consider myself someone who watches, like, much Saturday night TV shows. But actually, when I wrote it, I was like, oh, God, like, so many of these, Noel's House Party or Gladiators.
20 million views.
Yeah, are, like, which is so big,
Gladiators,
iconic.
11 million views at 5 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon.
It was genuinely... It was in the Birmingham Indoor Arena. It wasn't in a studio with 300 people. It was, like, 10,000 people
another
there.
Another one bites the dust, man. Another one bites the dust. So, do we go for a top three? Dare we ask for...
TV shows of the 90s?
It's up to you. You don't have to.
By the way,
you perked up a bit. You're ready for this one.
Do you know what? I just thought I should look at the contents there.
By the way, please accept anything that I'm in.
Excluding TFI Friday.
Yeah, I'm just presuming it's going to be in there.
That would have 100% been in there.
Okay.
But I would have got... I would go with... I think you'd go with... Fantasy Football League meant a huge amount to me and totally changed my life.
Because you love your footy.
I love my football. It got me into comedy in a way.
That was punk as well, wasn't it? That was a punk show.
Do you know what the best thing about that was? It didn't ever speak down. It didn't ever... They'd make jokes that were about... So they I interviewed Frank Skinner a few years ago, and he talked about like references to niche footballers, and the producers were trying to take them out or whatever, and he described them as these no surrender jokes, where they were like, no, these go in. And they were the jokes that meant that the show meant something to people, because you prided yourself in getting the jokes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you felt like you were in a club. It felt like you were in like a niche club where you stay up till 11 p.m. and watch jokes about Carlton Palmer that are not going to be made anywhere else.
And also,
you
wanted the sofa, you wanted the flat. It was quite Men Behaving Badly in its own football-y way, wasn't it?
Oh, it was just for people who loved football kind of deeply, those jokes about Carlton Palmer or, you know, I Blame Stuart Pearce.
Yeah.
And I used to love, they did this, it was called the Nationwide League then, what's now League One, League Two. They had a goal of the month competition from the lower divisions, and it would always be, you know, goal three from 4 yards in off his knee, you know, goal number two accidental own goal off the keeper's backside, and goal number one wasn't actually a goal or something like that. It was so funny, and the old football was rubbish little chant thing. Yeah. And I spent ages thinking old football was rubbish. I still do a bit, and it's that program's fault.
It was totally. And also, this was a time before, I don't want to sound like an old fogey, as you say, but like now, if a funny thing happens on a football pitch, it's on Twitter, it's on Instagram, you see it. This was your only access to see a footballer fall over.
What have they found this week?
Yeah, exactly.
And how long have they spent looking at this footage, and where the heck did they get the footage from, screamed all the other shows, like TFI Friday at the time. Where are they getting this from? And then we'd try and get something funny. We did this a lot. We try and get something funny from the world of Formula One. But Formula One, their going rate for footage was £10,000 a minute. And we'd have these big meetings at TFR Friday. Go, is it worth 10 grand? So, and Danny Baker would say, well, last week we floated a giant replica of the Euro trophy down the Thames for 15 seconds. That cost 25 grand. Oh, God, maybe. Yeah, let's do it. Who cares? And then it might not make the cut, the script cut. Interesting. Go on.
So, Fantasy Football League. I think Noel's house party was just so iconic. Just so brilliant.
And also really clever.
Brilliant.
As is Anton Next Saturday Night Takeaway now. You know, it leans on Lens from shows, you know, gone by. Like Noel's House Party, like Don't Forget Your Toothbrush. But they do bring something very, very new and equally worthy of reverence to the party.
Yes, I think so. And I think, you know, obviously the point of those shows is not to look like you're high art. But it's really easy to underestimate how good those shows are. But to make it a feature that is, you know, as universal as, say, NTV, which you got caught on with the cameras, didn't
you? Tell me about it.
Or the Gotchas or stuff. Yeah. These are things that, like, are really difficult to get right. And Noel Edmonds is just an amazing... And then, obviously, it created Mr. Blobby by accident, the kind of biggest celebrity of the 90s.
Yeah, and his theme park, what was it called?
Blobbyland.
Was it simply Blobbyland?
Oh, he talks all about this in the book.
Simple as that. Right, come on, Rachel, you pile in, because you have read it and you're really excited about the conversation.
You brought back a childhood trauma that I'd managed to bury deep within my psyche, watching Ghostwatch at Halloween when I was 12.
Yeah, that was something else, wasn't
it?
People
it was
who
terrifying.
Don't know, because I wasn't aware of this till Rachel started talking about this morning. We actually couldn't shut her up. I said, Rachel, we've got a show to do now. But you don't understand.
We all got a show,
and we all thought, hey, Sarah Green, what's happened to her? And what's going to happen to us if we keep watching this programme?
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm never going to trust Michael Parkinson again.
No.
I watched it a few months ago. It's still terrifying. It's absolutely
and
amazing.
And they claimed that they'd said it was a drama. But there was no.
Hang on, what was it, for heaven's sake?
So, shall I explain? So, Halloween night, the BBC kind of announced that they're doing a live outside broadcast from a haunted house. Brilliantly, not like an old haunted house, but like a suburban haunted house in Northolt. And and it's just this family that are being terrorised by a ghost called Pipes, who's like a poltergeist. They called him Pipes because the mum used to blame the sounds on the pipes.
Right.
And it's Michael Parkinson in the studio. And then Sarah Green in the house with Craig Charles as a kind of roving reporter, and Mike Smith, who was Sarah Green's husband, manning the phones, which adds a level when Sarah Green's getting terrorised that Mike Smith's terrified. And it all starts to go wrong. First 45 minutes is quite boring, and then but that's kind of builds up. It all starts to go wrong. We all thought it was real. It was a drama. We all thought it was real. And it ends with Sarah Green trapped in a house and Michael Parkinson possessed by pipes. And you're like, you're 10.
And wasn't it Halloween?
It was Halloween
and
night.
And then your parents are like, oh, it's over now. Go to bed. You're like, I can't go to bed. I'll never sleep again.
Like, everything I understood about the world has changed. Like,
it's funny because when you talk about it, you look like a 10-year-old. You're like, I mean, you do anyway, to be honest.
Yeah,
but
to be
even
fair.
Even more.
But it's just such a mad thing to happen.
Wow, it's all in the book. Right, number one.
I'm going to go... Well, I think I've got to go with Neighbours, but because we've already talked about that, I'll change my number one to... I think I'd have to go with a comedy show because I think comedy was so important. And you could pick from any number of comedy shows, but I'd choose one later in the 90s, which was The Royal Family, which I think doesn't get as much credit as it deserves for totally
it
changing.
Doesn't really. I don't know why that is. Some shows do that don't deserve and some shows don't that do deserve, and that's definitely the latter.
Yeah.
It did at the time. It won all the awards.
But it's slightly been forgotten, I think, because The Office came along and The Office was just so amazing, obviously. But people forget that was the first sitcom that did that. No laughter track, that feeling of reality, that feeling of character over big punchline, all of that. And it was, and it had so much heart, and it was just perfectly done. It just felt like something you'd never seen before.
And what Caroline and Craig's genius was, I think, because our house was very similar to that where I was brought up, and the conversations were very similar, you know, and before remote controls, your kids were the remote.
Yeah.
You know, turn the telly over, son.
Yeah.
No. Turn the telly over. Okay. All right. Will do. And all they did was they just turned up the brightness on reality because they, you know, there were jokes in there.
Yeah.
But those conversations were already happening and they just, I mean, don't get me wrong, just. I mean, it was genius is what it was because less is more, you know. And if you go a little bit more than less, it's not enough. And then you have to go more and it becomes grotesque and equally funny. But if you're dealing in comedy nuance, then you've got to be tuned into what you want to get out of what it is you've got.
Totally. It's a very difficult thing to pitch that right, particularly when there's nothing in the landscape like it. And, like, I think, you know, I might be wrong on this, but what I understand is that she basically got it through Caroline Ahern by doing another Mrs. Merton. And she was like, you've got to take this kind of thing that is not going to be that popular. And it turned out to, like, change the landscape of everything. I think it's perfect for the 90s because it summed up how everyone lived, which is around the television.
Yeah.
Throughout the Royal Family, the TV is on, if people are watching it or not. And that's what a house was like. The TV was on and the chats were going around the TV.
They were watching TFI Friday once on the Royal Family.
Oh, well, they were.
They were. And it was the bit of the show where we had the naked parade at the end where we all really were naked and anybody could join in. And I remember the Bare Naked Ladies, the band, couldn't wait to be on the show because they wanted to be in the naked parade at the end. And so they've been watching... So for this episode, they're watching TFI Friday all the way through, or for a lot of it, on the Royal Family. And you can hear me saying, because you get the glow of the telly and the soundtrack, which was the actual audio from TFI Friday, and it's me in the naked parade. And Jim says, I'm on screen doing my part of the naked parade. He says, that reminds me, I better get some tangerines tomorrow. Anyway. Right, so you're inspired by all this, right? It's in your blood, yeah?
Mm.
You become not just a fan of telly, but you become a disciple of it, unknowingly a disciple of it. And now you become a perpetrator. You are a perpetrator of it. You are now inhabiting the life that you didn't so much long for, maybe long for, but you thought was out of reach. How does it feel, Josh?
It's amazing, and I love it. And I think initially there's this weird thing with being on TV that you start and you feel, I can't believe I've walked into it. And I can't. So when you first do your panel shows, there's something where they play the theme to Have I Got News For You? And you're sat there and you're like, I can't believe it. Oh, my God, I'm there. And then you get used to it. And then I think you go through a period where you maybe... You don't appreciate it enough. I think there was definitely a few years where I didn't appreciate it enough. It just felt normal to me, and I maybe didn't appreciate what an honour it was to get to do this stuff. And in the last couple of years, whether it's, I know it's a cliche, but whether it's like having kids or whether it's the lockdown or whatever.
Or both.
Yeah, I've really like begun to go, like, just try and enjoy every moment of this, because this is an unbelievable kind of adventure to get to do it. There is a element of writing this book where you go, how much of what I'm doing am I viewing through this prism of the 90s television? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How much am I able to move what I'm doing away from just going, and what I'm doing, it's a bit like that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, how much of it's just reliving these dreams that I had, or not dreams I had, but like, these things I was obsessed with when I was a kid.
Which was it strikes me as it's one of those books, and it's not taking anything away from the endeavour that it takes to write any kind of book. By the way, if you haven't tried it, have a go and you'll see what we mean. But it does seem to me like this may have been not an easy book to write, but it may have come to you more naturally than others. Were the chapters easy? Were the chapters easier than others? Or was it literally just, I'm just going to write down my fondest memories of these shows and see how it pans out?
It was a joy to write, in the sense of, like, I loved disappearing into it. It felt like you were... And also, a lot of this was done during the lockdown. So it was amazing to go, I'm disappearing back into this completely different reality. And it may be in that way that, you know, I don't know, someone who writes fantasy loves to disappear in that fantasy world. I almost felt like I was disappearing into this fantasy world of the actual past.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a joy to revisit all that stuff and reevaluate it and not slag it off or not, but celebrate it. Do you know what I mean? Because there's so much that's like, looking back and going, oh, you wouldn't do that now, that wouldn't happen, that wouldn't be allowed, oh, things were... But you're going, it's not a book going, this wouldn't have been like... It's about going, there was all these amazing things that happened. And I think it was a brilliantly hopeful time, right? And it was a hopeful time in terms of the culture of the nation, in terms of sport, in terms of television, in terms of music, but politically as well. I think there's this weird thing where the 90s was bookended by the Berlin Wall coming down in 1989 and 9/11 in 2001. And between that, it didn't feel as politically heavy. It didn't feel like the world was, you know, in peril in the way that it maybe feels if you're growing up now, or if you, my older siblings were growing up in the 80s and worried about, you know, nuclear war and stuff. It felt like
HIV and everything was going on.
It felt, obviously there was lots of bad things that were happening, as there always is, but it felt like a much lighter time. It felt like a much more celebratory time.
Yeah, it was definitely sort of, when you get a thunderstorm and the air clears, it did feel a bit like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad that you know, the generation below mine, or half a generation at least, felt the same way. There's a show here. You know there's a show here, don't you?
I hope there's a show here, yeah.
Well, I think there is a show. I've talked about it a lot, and you should do it, and it should be on Channel 4, and you should put, you know, the tonight's classic clips, or whatever you want to call it, classic clashes, or whatever you want to call it. And you lay out, okay, so tonight we're going Men Behaving Badly versus Fantasy Football League. Okay, first two clips, it's so-and-so against so-and-so, and you can vote for it. It's live, okay? And we're only going to show one. It's after the break. You've got 2 minutes to vote. Do you want to see Martin Clunes doing this? Or do you want to see Badil and Skinner doing this? Let us know. And by the way, guests tonight include. And you're all watching your telly and you're all reliving your favourite telly.
Yeah. I think that's also a thing where people love to, you know, there's a reason Friends is the most popular thing on Netflix. People want to disappear back into these things.
Yeah.
Particularly in the current world as it is, do you know what I mean? Without, like, people want to disappear back to those times. And there's nothing, I think nostalgia is a kind of dirty word, and I'm not saying this is just a nostalgia thing, because it's not, but like, I don't think there's anything wrong with looking back on your a time you lived through really fondly.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You start off with clips of the first half hour. You have a right laugh. There's a bump fight. There's a live studio. There's bands, right?
Yeah.
You start off with clips, and we're going to go three clips against three clips, head to head. It's the World Championship of sitcoms on Tuesdays in 1993, right?
Yeah.
And then it's one episode, a 23-minute episode of one sitcom against another, which is the second big vote, and then you finish with a movie or something. But there are two, and it's all one against the other. And tonight it's live. We're live on Channel 4, Josh Widdicombe, and tonight you decide what we're going to watch. But we're going to watch whatever you decide together.
I'm up for it, Chris. 100% up for
no,
it.
That's my involvement over. That was the beginning, middle and end. And now it's over to Josh Whittaker.
Well, you know how you wanted Jonathan Ross to host TFI Friday. You ended up doing it yourself. Be careful what you wish for on this,
Come on,
Chris.
No, seriously. It's yours. Have it with my love. Well, thanks for writing the book.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a genuine pleasure to talk to you about it.
We haven't talked at all about your stand-up tickets.
Don't worry about that.
JoshWhittaker.com. Just go there and find out what he's up to other than what he's just been up to for the last hour. Josh,
thanks so much.
Joy to see you. This book, Josh Whittaker, Watching Neighbours Twice a Day, How 90s TV Almost Prepared Me for Life. What did it miss out?
There were certain things that you know.
All right. We can't not finish with the Spice Girls. We just have to.
Oh, yes, please. Thank
have
you.
A great day, Josh.
Thank you, guys. Pleasure.
Ta-da! Josh Whittaker, everyone! Woo!
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
How good was Josh? Josh really came in conversation with myself there, talking about his fabulous new book, How 90s TV Almost Prepared Me for Life. It's out now, and you should pick up a copy. I think you'd love it. Thank you for downloading this special extra edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show with Sky. And if you haven't already, you can subscribe for free to get our best bits every week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.